So we have come to the next part of the mindfulness for young adults session. Actually, these days we are discussing Khagga Visana Sutta, which is talking about Paccheka Buddhas. Actually, this is an explanation given by the commentary, so but it is not unique to Paccheka Buddhas, but even the Sammasambuddhas and his followers, that's the Sangha members, also could have the same kind of attitude, same kind of an approach. And whoever leading the path may time to time may have these qualities develop in oneself. But anyway, the commentary mentions that each verse is a kind of an explanation, kind of an udana, sort of happy utterance by a Paccheka Buddha once he attained Paccheka Buddhahood. Now, actually, this discourse was preached by the Buddha to Venerable Ananda, and this sutta actually contains many verses, and each verse is connected with the attainment of a Paccheka Buddha. So, therefore, there's a beautiful story behind, and after that, there is a verse uttered by the Paccheka Buddha, and then the explanation from which actually we can learn a lot. Now we went through a couple of verses already, and now we have come to the 42nd verse. Actually, it starts from 35 because the Sutta Nipata start from Uraga Sutta and going on. Now we are actually in the Khagga Visana Sutta. We started from there, so the first verse starts from number 35. And now we are in number 42. So here, actually, this also related to a particular bodhisattva, actually a Paccheka Bodhisattva, how he became Paccheka Buddhahood. So if we go to the story behind the verse, it's also an interesting one. So during the Blessed One Kassapa, there were five Paccheka Bodhisattvas who were living under the Buddha Kassapa, before the Gautama Buddha. So there is several other Buddhas, and one of them is Kassapa Buddha. And under him, these Bodhisattvas were spending time as monks, and they were developing mindfulness in each and every activity for a long time. And by the way, they couldn't attain. So at the end of the life, they have born in the heaven realms. And on another occasion, once they are coming back to the human realm, so they got birth as kings. The eldest Bodhisattva became the king of the Varanasi, and the others actually became provincial kings. So what happened was the provincial kings, those are four provincial kings, and as they are maturing and they actually got some understanding through their own, and they attained Paccheka Buddhahood. And after some time, they are spending time in seclusion, and they check what is the reason for us to became Paccheka Buddhahood, and who else were with us fulfilling these requirements, Parami. And then they understood there is another one who actually was the eldest among ourselves. Where is he now? Now they are actually reflecting. It's a kind of a gratitude that they felt, and as a result, so they were searching who is the other person who has helped us during the Sasana of the Kassapa Buddha, and where is he now? And they recognize, okay, this person has now born as the king of the Varanasi, and he is actually leading the kingship. He is not yet become a Paccheka Buddha. He couldn't attain any sort of supramundane level, so he is simply enjoying the senses. So these Paccheka Buddhas, four Paccheka Buddhas, understood that. So now they want to arouse some urgency in this person's mind, the Varanasi king's mind. Actually, at that time, he was this particular king, the king of the Varanasi, has become somewhat frightened through the dreams. So he has went through some nightmares, and as a result, he was somewhat afraid, feared. And what happened was, he has mentioned that to one of his advisors. The advisor is a cunning person, and he felt, rather than I am consoling this king, I better use this opportunity to earn some more money. So this is a cunning advisor, and who is now trying to mislead the king. So he is a Brahmin, and he told the king, now you are in a bad situation, there is a unfortunate situation going to happen. You can do a huge yaga kind of a ritual in order to overcome this situation. You know, there are in the Brahmin religion, so they do various sacrifices. And as a result, what happened was, he asked the king to collect a lot of animals, thousands of goats, thousands of cattle, thousands of hens. So likewise, various animals now being gathered to a huge area. And they are going to do a kind of a ritual by killing all the animals. Now, at the same time, the Paccheka Buddhas, the four of them, who were actually searching the king's situation, and they understood now this king is going to do a really bad thing. He is going to kill thousands of animals, and that is quite detrimental to him. So if he conduct this, he is in a danger. He won't be able to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. So we should go and inform the king. We should take him to the correct direction as soon as possible. This is the kind of gratitude and helping hand, sympathetic attitude these Paccheka Buddhas are having towards the king now. So they now went to the king, and now they are sitting and approaching in the king's garden. And at that time, king was looking outside, and king has noticed them. And once the king has noticed, immediately, so he got an affection towards these four Paccheka Buddhas, because so there is a huge previous link. They were all together during the Buddha Kassapa, and they were doing well, and they are companions, friends, good friends, and helping each other, and spend a lot of time in the developing morality, concentration and wisdom. So that affection, that companionship has aroused in the mind of the king. And immediately, therefore, king asked those Paccheka Buddhas to come to the palace. So he has sent a messenger and asked them to, or invite them to come to the palace. And once they reached the palace, so he offered them dana, some, you know, food, alms. And at the end, now he's asking, who are you? So kind of a interesting question. Now Paccheka Buddhas, so they, rather than telling that they are Paccheka Buddhas, now they are giving an excellent answer. We are called those at home in the four directions. Kind of a puzzle that they answer. Answer through a puzzle. And then actually the king couldn't understand. So then he again asked, what does this mean, Bhante? At home in the four directions. What did you mean by at home in the four directions? Now there is a time for the Paccheka Buddhas to explain what they really mean. Mayanghi Maharaja mettang bhavema, karunam bhavema, muditam bhavema, upekkhang bhavema, tena nothang bhayang nahotiti. Now they are explaining. Now they are developing loving kindness, metta. They are developing karuna, compassion. They are developing mudita, altruistic joy. And they are developing upekkha, equanimity, in all four directions, everywhere. As a result, there is no fear. Bhayang na hoti. There is no fear in ourselves. So as a result of that, we are called those at home in four directions. In one sense, so these Pacheka Buddhas are sort of encompassing all the directions with loving kindness. Now, you know, the development of the loving kindness meditation is a kind of a joyful one. And how they do is that first you may sit in a comfortable position, and then keep yourself comfortable, and as a result of that comfort you feel a little happy because now you are feeling at ease. So you come to the posture and establish mindfulness, and now you spread loving kindness towards yourself. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from any afflictions. Likewise, so you are feeling good, you are wishing yourself goodness, well-being towards yourself. So it's a kind of a refreshing feeling that you have. So you are doing it honestly to yourself. And once you are doing it well, so you feel comfortable further, you feel happy, you feel joyful, and there is no friction, and you are now in a very good mood, very positive atmosphere. And once you are successful, then what you do is you select one of your maybe teacher, someone who you are respecting, and you are assuming that he is in front of you. He is also in a quite good mood. And now you wish him also, may he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from enmity, may he be well and happy. So likewise, so you are wishing him also well-being. Now you are doing again and again to him. Assume that you are able to reach to the same level as you have towards yourself. Now you have loving kindness towards this respectful person at the same level. Now you can take few more of the same category. And maybe you can now take maybe your mother, father, whoever you are further respecting, and maybe your friends. So likewise, now you are spreading more and more, and then later you can take some neutral people as well, whom you have seen in the bus, whom you have not much known. So likewise, you don't have any affection or any kind of resentment, rather you have some equanimity towards them. So even for them, now you can develop loving kindness. And now you can even consider your enemies. If you have certain people that you don't like much, even for them you are now spreading metta, loving kindness. Now likewise, now you are sort of developing this loving kindness practice. Now as you are succeeding, being successful in this situation, now you actually can expand your mind. Now there is no any kind of a category, rather the all beings in front of me, or all beings in the front direction, may all be well, all be happy, all be free from any afflictions, may all be well and happy. So now you are spreading metta to the all the beings in front of you, in the front direction, the whole direction. Similarly, you do it for the right direction, your right hand direction. May all the beings in the right hand direction be well and happy. May they be free from any afflictions. Similarly, you are spreading metta, loving kindness, to your behind direction. May all the beings in the rear direction, may all be well and happy, be free from afflictions, and may they well and happy. May all the beings in the left direction, now we are spreading further to the left direction, and to the upper direction, may all the beings in the upper direction be well and happy. May all beings in the lower direction, may they also be well and happy. Now you are in a way getting all the types of directions. As a result, your mind has become fairly expanded. But is not narrow. So typically our mind is quite narrow. We are only considering ourselves, quite selfish, and maybe only our loved ones, not no one else. So we wish happiness only for our members of the family, not anyone else. So we are quite restricted. We have very limited scope in our mind, quite narrow mind. But with the loving kindness practice, so we are expanding our limits. So the mind becomes limitless, free from any limitation, free from any kind of categorization, free from any race, religion, groups, caste, no such distinction at all. So now you have kind of a all-encompassing kind of loving kindness. The whole universe, now you can spread my loving kindness. So likewise, now your mind is quite enlarged, expanded. You are appearing like a source of loving kindness. So your loving kindness is spread all around the universe. So your mind is now fully expanded, unlimited. Now, and then the same approach can be taken if you are developing what you call the mudita, altruistic joy, the same approach. So altruistic joy means that say when you see someone's joy or when someone's happiness or someone's comfort or someone's wealth, that typically we get jealousy, we become envious. But the opposite is what we need to develop. So instead of feeling envious or jealous, so you can be happy of someone else's success. So this also a sublime abiding, Brahma Vihara. So therefore Buddha recommends, so this altruistic joy, mudita practice. Similarly, if someone is not in a good position, so you feel empathetic, you feel compassionate. And so this compassion is also another very good skill that one can develop. The same approach. Say you are being compassionate to yourself, and you have that compassionate feeling, and then you are spreading that to someone else, a group of people, the group of people in the whole country, whole universe. So likewise, now you are spreading compassion all around directions, all the directions, all to all the universe, entire universe. Similarly, the equanimity. So the equanimity, upekkha. So you can take the same approach. You can become equanimous to yourself, and you can understand, okay, so this body and the mind are subjected to various causes and conditions, and it is subjected to various karmic relations, influences. So I can simply have to be equanimous. So you give prominence to this equanimity. So you are developing equanimity. So likewise, you can develop equanimity towards all other beings, to the beings who are in the front, to the beings onto your left, onto your right, to the beings onto your behind direction, onto your left, upper, lower. So likewise, you are somewhat expanding equanimity to all the directions. So likewise, these four Brahma Viharas, divine abodes or divine abidings, can be developed, and this is really a beautiful practices. So Buddha also has recommended that, and one can, if one is able to achieve this sort of a very high level of loving kindness, you can actually use that base as a vipassana practice. That is also another side benefit that we can take. So rather than simply dwelling in this beautiful, blissful state of these Brahma Viharas, once you have reached very expanded level of the mind, So you can use that as a reference, as a base for your vipassana practice. That is also possible. Now in the verse, so there are a few things that we can pay our attention. Chatuddhiso appatigocha hoti. Now this is the verse that the Paccheka Buddhas were uttering to the king, Varanasi. And so they are telling Chatuddhiso appatigocha hoti. At home in the four directions. So they have no patiga, no any resentment, resistance, anger in any direction. So they are completely boundless. So their minds are completely boundless, no restriction. So all the four directions, therefore, their mind is like filled with loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, and all those kinds of Brahma viharas. Santussamanu itari itarena. That's another very beautiful, very interesting quality mentioned. Santussamanu itari itarena. Contented with anything whatsoever. Now, typically, as human beings, we are always unsatisfied, always searching for something. So probably you have a car, you have a house, you have husband, wife, children, a good remuneration, maybe a good, wealth already have, but still not feeling satisfied. Uno loko atitto tanha daso, Buddha mentioned. You feel somewhat missing, something is missing, still not fulfilled. So this is a kind of a, we can say, affliction we all have, kind of a shortcoming we all have. Even though we have everything, still we don't feel happy. We don't feel contented. We don't feel fulfilled. Still searching for something else. So this is the kind of a driving force of tanha, craving. But the opposite is something that we have to develop. Santutti. Santutti paramandana. Buddha mentioned that the contentment is the best wealth. So here these Paccheka Buddhas are also emphasizing santuttamano, santussamano, itari itarena. So they are quite happy, contented with what they have. So they are not going after various requisites, expecting more and more pleasure, kind of sensual pleasures, not going after luxurious items. Rather, they are quite satisfied with what they are having. So it is not only for the Paccheka Buddhas or monks, rather even with the lay people. So if you are in a constant struggle to going after various luxuries or various requisites, so you will be sort of restless and you will be always stressed because nothing is fulfilled. So you are still going on and on, searching this and that. Mind is never satisfied. Your children never satisfied, wife never satisfied, husband never satisfied, you yourself not satisfied. So never going to satisfy. But the opposite, the contentment, shows us alternative path where I assume that you have something already gained and you feel happy about it. And you recognize, I have gained this, accumulated this with proper means. And therefore you feel happy, you feel contented. So you have spent time, you have spent your own energy and you put forth a lot of your effort. As a result, you are able to gain some, wealth. And with that, you feel happy. Attisukha. You are feeling happy because you have something now. You have earned something with your effort. It is not something that you have stolen. Rather, with your effort, that you have earned something. With that, you are happy and contented. So this contentment, therefore, is something Buddha recommended. Santutti paramandanam. The contentment is the supreme wealth. Contented with anything whatsoever. Enduring obstacles. Now, enduring obstacles is one part of our life. So you can't have a completely, say, positive life, or what you can say, only a life with the ups, or only a life with only the goodness, as human beings, as all the beings. So we have to go through the ups and downs of the life, so vicissitudes of the life. So it is inevitable, gain and loss, or the profit and the loss, and the happiness and unhappiness, and maybe the fame and the loss, or fame and ill fame, praise and the blame. So these are inevitable to everyone's life, even to the Buddha, even to the Arahants. This is common. So we as human beings, therefore, we have to endure these situations. So this, on top of this, there are various other obstacles. So we have various threats. We have to be patient with various illnesses. And time to time, there are various natural disasters, pandemics. And likewise, there are many challenges in our life. So therefore, Buddha mentioned enduring obstacles. So enduring obstacles is, in a way, is the way for us to develop our strength. So if we are able to face these challenges, these obstacles, as a result, we are strengthening ourselves. We are spiritually becoming mature, and we get a lot of opportunities to recognize ourselves and to develop endurance in ourselves, patience in ourselves. And we are able to learn from the obstacles. So therefore, we can't reject the obstacles. They are coming on our way. They are inevitable. And once they approach, so we have to handle them properly. And then fearless. So we are not afraid of those obstacles. So this is actually how to happen in our lives. So you can't always run away from challenges. You have to take certain challenges. It is not that you are going and asking for challenges. Rather, there are certain situations that you can't stop it. You can't avoid it. They are coming on your way. And you understood, I am the one now going to handle it. No one else is there. Now I have to go through it. So you have to take it. And you have to face it properly, successfully. So that strengthens our mind. That strengthens ourselves spiritually. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, not being afraid of these challenges and successfully facing them. And in order to do that, then the last statement say, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So this doesn't in a way say that in order to fulfill all these things that you have to be alone. But the theme of the sutta is a rhinoceros horn, where the emphasis is on the seclusion, solitude. And when one is maintaining a solitary life, so the achievement of these goals could be comparatively easy. And on the other hand, there are other ways that we can look at it. Till you are dependent on others, and you are always asking help from the others, and always wanting others to help you, and you feel sort of inferior, and you always underestimate yourself. I can't do it. He has to help me. He has to show me the path. So he has to give me money. We are a poor country. Others are rich countries. They have to come and help us. We are third world. They are the first world. So we have this defeated mentality. So till we have this defeated mentality, then we can't become strong. So in order to become strong, so we have to have some sort of a self-sufficiency. And that is in the country sense. But on the other hand, in the personal sense, they are also, if we want to be strong, then we don't need to go after everyone. probably if there are Kalyanamittas, we can go approach them for their guidance. So once we have some good guidance, so we have to become our own saviors. We have to become our own protectors. And Buddha also mentioned that he is simply a person who is showing us the path. He can't lead the path for ourselves, on behalf of us. Rather, he can simply show the path. So we ourselves individually have the responsibility to traverse in the path, to direct or lead the path. So therefore, always the responsibility has given to oneself. Now, if you want to become strong, so you have to be independent. And when you are independent, you have to face a lot of challenges. You can't ask others to come and help every time. You have to take correct decisions. And sometimes they can go wrong. So that is how we are maturing in a way. So you can't go every time following your parents. You can't always ask help from your parents. You can't always ask help from your husband, wife. You can't always ask help from your friends, teachers. So you yourself have to become a strong person. How to do it? So one option is to become alone. To have some solitude. You may be spending a family life, but time to time you have to have a seclusion. Inner introspection, you are looking at yourself. Where am I? How is my mind state? How is it handling the situations? Is it capable of enduring the upcoming challenges, obstacles? So am I successfully handling the challenges? So likewise, you have a kind of an introspection. So that actually helps us to develop ourselves. So therefore, it recommends Eko Chare Kagga Visana Kappu. One should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So these are very interesting and sort of maturing kind of verses, helping us to look at in different angle rather than always becoming with a defeated mindset, to have kind of a, in a way, kind of a personality, strong mindset to face the challenges. And today's verse, therefore, is encouraging that kind of atmosphere in ourselves so that we can handle any kind of a situation. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Sorry about that. There's currently six questions. Just a small announcement. There was a question about the recording for last Sunday, so that was the 11th. We haven't sent that recording yet to Bhante, so we'll do that with this week's recording, so that'll be up on the website very soon. Question number one of six. It's about mindfulness and day-to-day activities. Dear Venerable Bhante, this is in regards to my day-to-day practice of mindfulness in other activity. I notice myself being anxious. My body is uncomfortable and I tend to be stiff. This is this I noticed when I was seated and I was typing on the computer or calling someone on the phone or even just sitting down. I cannot find the reason why I am feeling anxious. It is an uneasiness feeling. Can you please help me? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Uneasiness. I mean, there could be various reasons. Actually, you have to reflect on yourself. It's difficult to predict exactly what is the exact reason. So there may be certain family issues. There may be certain issues coming through your, say, friends. Maybe the, problems in your office environment. So likewise, I mean, there are many reasons for our kind of unrest arising in ourselves. And again, I think that some of you and are already going through a lockdown, so those also matters, because those are the environmental reasons. So we are not allowed to move freely, so that also actually give a kind of a restriction to our mind. So we being feel sort of burdened restricted, constrained. So therefore we can't freely move. So that represent kind of an unrest in the mind. Little bit of stressful situation or tension in the mind. So therefore you have to check exactly what are the exact reasons. And on the other hand, you can, I mean, if possible, if you have a garden, you can go to the garden and have a kind of a chair there and simply sit there and try to look at the environment, open up yourself, and probably you can listen to some soft music which you like. Likewise, you have to have a little bit of openness and a little bit of joy in this kind of situation. Because if you are watching too much television, watching the news again and again, and always talking about the pandemic, talking about the lockdown, talking about the bad situation, then definitely you are going to end up with depression. So instead of that, so try to see the positive side. Otherwise, I mean, it's difficult. Yeah. So even yesterday, Bhante Dhammajiva also mentioned during the training that Pollyanna, the story behind the Pollyanna book. So even that she is quite a young and helpless little girl, so he actually started to look at the life more positively, trying to be glad at all circumstances. So this is something that we can actually learn. So this is something that we have to develop in a way. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. Mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, previously, a few months ago, I have touched upon stillness, and now automatically I go to that. Although I still use a bit of breath as anchoring if needed from time to time. When I wrote that report, the answer I received was just let things happen and watch. Now I notice that some days I spend hours in stillness, not in sitting or walking, just sitting on a sofa. Recently I wanted to go for a sitting, and I did for 1 hour, and I felt like I'm restricting my mind. I felt a relief after I got up after 1 hour, and felt relaxed because I got off from the sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, would you please be able to help me here? What's the fine line between letting things be and then still continue according to a timetable? From a mind perspective, when one has gone to an autopilot, how should practice be structured? I mean mentally. Much appreciation and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think this is something that we have to balance in a way. We are difficult to stick to a schedule now. I mean, sticking to a schedule is in a way kind of you are restricting yourself, and you are kind of trying yourself to have kind of a frame to restrain. But here, as you are developing Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, to have kind of an unassociated state of mind, anisthita state. So there, as you are reaching and developing that state, so you have to let things happen, and even your sitting schedule has to be flexible. So it is not that you are strictly following the schedule, rather you are meditating. But as it comes, depending on the circumstances, and it is not a kind of losing your practice, rather you are now embracing the whole life as a practice. While walking, you are practicing. While staying or waiting for someone, you are practicing. While going through a bus, you are practicing. While traveling by train, you are practicing. While talking with another person, you are practicing. While having your meals, you are practicing. There is no time that you are not practicing. So the whole life has become a platform for you to practice. Therefore, strictly following a particular schedule is not the approach. Rather, you are expanding your practice to the whole situations of the life, daily activities. And you are now searching whether am I able to maintain kind of a relaxed mind, stress-free mind, non-grasping mind in these situations as well. While I am waiting for a bus, am I able to maintain such relaxed mind? While I am talking to someone, is it possible? While I am eating, is it possible? So likewise, it's a matter of expanding this skill, developing this skill to the other areas. So therefore, likewise, you have to develop. So that is the approach that we have to take.
Question number 307. General question. Dear Bhante, thank you for this wonderful session, and we are fortunate to learn from your practical experience. I have a question regarding last week's clear comprehension explanation. You have explained quite well what clear comprehension means and how it connects in the practice. In addition to that, can you specify some places or experiences in practice, mainly when we are doing sitting and walking, so we can identify this is mindfulness, this is clear comprehension, in a practical, distinguishable way? With Betta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, establishing mindfulness, we can say now your mind is not shifted to the past or the future, rather it is well established in the present moment. So your mind is well focused, established, and not wavering, and it's in the present moment. So that we can safely say, now the mindfulness has established. Now, mindfulness has established onto something, so at the earlier stages. So that something, what we call the phenomena, the primary object, has to be investigated. Now this investigation is where we are talking as the clear comprehension. So assume that your mindfulness has established onto the breath. Now we are examining the breath. So what are the aspects of the breath? Is it long? Is it short? Is it warm? Is it cool? From which nostril it is going in, out? And what are the element characteristics in this breath? Or is it the same breath, or a single breath, or is a group of small breaths? So likewise, you do a very close examination into the breath. So this is where the clear comprehension working out. So this is a distinction you can say between the mindfulness and clear comprehension. But anyway, so both aspects are growing. So don't expect that mindfulness is only the level of being in the present, but it also has certain other evolvement. It also evolving into various other directions. Similarly, the clear comprehension also evolving further to various directions. So mindfulness is developing, as you know, in the 37 Bodhipakkhya Dhammas. So it starts with Kayanupassana, then say going to Vedananupassana, then to Chittanupassana, then to Dhammanupassana. Say then as a faculty, indriya, sati indriya, then as a bala, as a power, and then as a bojjhanga, sati sambojjhanga, and then as a path factor, samma sati. So likewise, it's a kind of a growing factor. Similarly, the panya. So we may start with clear comprehension, knowing about the phenomena, and it may also grow. And it growing may be like, say, you are having clear understanding about the, say, elements and knowing their individual characteristics, and then, say, understanding their universal behavior, the universal characteristics, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self characteristics, and using which you are developing further insights. So likewise, the wisdom is also growing. So these, therefore, even though we distinct between mindfulness and clear comprehension, so we can give a definition only at that level. But both skills are growing skills, expanding skills. Yeah.
Question number 407, mindful walking. Venerable Sir, I find that the walking mindfulness practice is very useful in working from home and lockdown situations. From your earlier guidance, I recall the best arrangement is to find 25 to 30 steps, straight walking path, having sand or grass. I'm trying multiple areas within and outside of the house to do walking. Much better if you can highlight limitations of issues with the following scenario. So there's four scenarios. Number one, if the walking path is too short, example, only 10 to 12 steps, which is less than 50% of the normal path. Second one is, if there is no stop and turn around when walking, example, when in a playground or a pedestrian walk, where it is difficult to turn back, what is the exact use of stop and turn? Number three, if the path is continuous and circular, an example, playground. Thank you for your valuable guidance. That's the end of the question.
Actually, we can say like, say if you are walking in a playground, say going around and round, I mean, there is no huge difference. I mean, there are no huge disadvantages. Only thing is that in a prepared walking path, so you feel comfortable and your mind is in a somewhat restrained environment, and it's easy to develop concentration, less distractions, and you are well focused to the task. But on the other hand, when you are continuously moving through various, say, streets and maybe around the playground, so there are other things also that you have to pay attention. So you have to cross the roads, you have to allow others to pass by, and say you have to allow vehicles to go, because you are moving or you are going through a walking path in a city or village. So that's different. So your attention has somewhat distracted towards those activities. And similarly in the playground, so if there are no others, others also fine, I mean, having them also fine, but for a beginner it could be more distractive. But once you are becoming somewhat skillful in the practice, you should be able to handle these situations. Even in the, say, playground, you may be able to develop mindful walking. And on the other hand, as we discussed earlier, so if one is able to achieve some amount of non-grasping state of the mind, so then, I mean, there is no big difference. Because either you move in your own, say, walking path, or you are freely moving through a, say, country road, or you are moving through a, say, busy road. So still your main concern is guarding the mind. You are watching the mind. It is not the steps that matter. You are not searching for any, say, element characteristics to your foot. Rather, you are now watching the mind, even though the body is walking. So such a different approach is also there as you are developing. So it depends on your practice, actually, we can say.
Question number 5 of 7. General question. Dear Swami Mansa, can you explain a bit about the four bases of psychic power and if it is an essential part of our practice? Given it in Singhalese, I'm going to send it here. But I think there's a
Uddipada. Chanda, Chitta, Virya, Vimansa. Yeah, Hatara Uddipada. Four types of, I mean, we are telling the English term as, what's the English term given, Chatu? English term?
Well, they say bases of psychic power. I don't know.
Psychic powers. Oh, no, psychic powers is not the correct term. There is somewhat practical term given, referred by Bhikkhu Bodhi. I can't exactly remember, for Iddipada. So these actually are the ones who are capable of fulfilling our task. So, say for example, you are a person who is keeping effort as the best, say, skill in yourself. So, as different people, we all have different kind of qualities in ourselves. A certain person is quite determined to do whatever the thing that he is doing. Say you are giving a kind of a target for someone. then he is taking it quite seriously. He is quite determined to achieve it. So this determination is one aspect in our life. And to another person, you are giving kind of a desire. So you should become a doctor. You should become an engineer. You should become a a teacher. You should become a scientist. So likewise, you should attain sotapanna. So there's a kind of a whatever, either it is mundane or supramundane, you can keep kind of an ambition, kind of a desire in front. So I should attain this. So it's a kind of a desire driven. And on the other hand, there are other approach, that is the wisdom approach, where you want to see, you want to really see whether it is correct. So if I now come back to the Dhamma, so Chanda is the desire, where you want to become a Sotapanna. So there's a desire to become. So you are driven by that desire. So it's a good desire, by the way. So this kind of a desire is necessary for us to motivate ourselves. So therefore it is called Chanda Iddipada. The interesting part in the Dhamma is as you are achieving more and more, the desire become weaker and weaker. It's an interesting task. So to give you a simple example, so Venerable Ananda is explaining this to one Brahmin. So he asked from the Brahmin, now when you want to see me, there is a desire. So therefore you have that desire, and with that desire you came to the monastery. And once you come to the monastery, so that desire has appeased. Now it has become peaceful. There is no more desire because you have fulfilled the desire. So therefore this is called Chanda Iddipada. And there's the other one which we call effort, virya. So as I mentioned, certain people are quite effortful. So they have a relentless effort. There are various obstacles coming on their way. They are somehow overcoming them. So they are reaching the final goal with effort. So therefore this is called virya iddipada. And then some others are quite determined to fulfill their task. So determination is there. So that is called Chitta Iddipada. And the other ones, they want to verify it. They want to investigate the path. So there is path mentioned by the Buddha. There are monks preaching it. There are books explaining it. Is it true? Is it possible to achieve it today? Is it valid today? Is it really true? Now you want to investigate. So this is the wisdom approach, the panya, or vimansa, iddipada. So therefore these are actually time to time, all four actually in the same person's mind also, time to time different iddipada may sort of take the upper hand. But in overall, people have characteristics. Approaches, and depending on that, therefore it is mentioned these four iddipadas are helping us to fulfill our objective, our goal. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 7, mindful sitting. Bhante, with reference to the guided sitting today, once the mindfulness is established, similar to your guidance, is it beneficial to check the status of the mind in terms of the hindrances? Example, being aware and knowing that there is no such hindrances in the mind. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah, you can certainly check. Because typically in the mind guided sitting, so we don't give, can give, of course. But today, actually, I didn't go to the, say, feelings or the watching the mind. Rather, we restricted to the body. But definitely, you can do it. So if you are able to establish mindfulness and you are confident, you are a somewhat experienced practitioner, you have gained some amount of mindfulness already, clear comprehension already, so then definitely you can look at the mind, no harm.
Question number 7, this is the last one. General question, there's two of them, yeah. Dear Bhante, thank you for the Dhamma sermon. I have two questions. Number one, How often should one practice metta meditation? Shouldn't it be done as part of walking and or sitting meditation? Number two, in what ways does loving kindness towards sick people help them? Is there anything in particular we should meditate on for unwell people? With metta, that's the end of the question.
So basically, this loving kindness is part of the what you call Satara Kamatahan, the four guardian meditations. Say four guardian meditations are introduced traditionally. Those are in a way supports to our practice: metta, asubha, maranasati, and buddhanusati. Loving kindness, contemplation on the depth. Reflecting about the Buddha's qualities and the reflections about the loathsomeness of the body. So I think you already have known these things. So actually loving kindness helps us to overcome anger, thoughts of ill will in ourselves. So I mean, if in case you feel that your say mind is not settled and it's going through some resentful thoughts, ill will towards someone, and not in a good mood, so then of course loving kindness meditation is quite helpful, because immediately practicing anapanasati on such situation may not be successful. So taking yourself to the middle to have a kind of an equanimous mind before starting the anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, so you can practice loving kindness. So therefore, typically, you can check your state of the mind. Suppose you had a bad day, you had a lot of arguments during the office, they went through a lot of difficulties, so you are not in a, say, happy mood. On such situation, you can actually practice loving kindness, or you can practice reflecting the qualities of the Buddha, Buddha Anusati. So that again your mind become happy in a positive atmosphere, feeling calm, enjoying, and sort of you are now coming to the positive atmosphere. So then you can start Anapanasati. And what's the other question, Chatu?
The second one was, in what ways does loving kindness towards sick people help them? Is there anything in particular we should meditate on for unwell people?
Yeah. So this also may help, because sometimes these people may go through various difficulties due to their, say, karmic problems, karmic issues, and certain unseen issues also could be there. So if you are spreading metta towards that person, so that also may help. Actually, first it helps you, because you are developing kindness, you are developing compassion, you are developing loving kindness in yourself. So you are the ones most benefited. And on the other hand, the other person also may feel good vibrations of your heart. So it is difficult to explain in this way, how exactly this happens. But I have seen certain videos, scientific videos. Now actually certain scientists are also telling, so when you meditate and when you are sort of spreading loving kindness, etc., so this is a kind of a certain good vibrations, good vibes that is spreading from your heart, from yourself. And the other people are also the same. I mean, they also have either good vibes or negative vibrations. So now if you are spreading more and more positive vibrations, so that actually may have a healing effect on the other person. And therefore they even advise not to have kind of a negative attitude even of another person. Because you are now assume that someone is approaching you and you have some negative attitude towards him. So that actually represents through the vibrations in yourself, and that actually sort of deteriorate the relationship. And you are not allowing the other person to enter yourself. accommodating him in your space. But on the other hand, if you have an open attitude, you are ready to accommodate, then you have some positive vibrations spreading, and therefore the other person has opportunity to develop, to correct himself. So likewise, scientists are also now explaining it in different angles. And I think this is why Buddha also has mentioned, and you know that the Karaniya Metta Sutta was chanted in a sort of fearful environment where the unseen, deities are not happy about the monks residing, and the Buddha actually asks monks to recite loving kindness and practice loving kindness and recite loving kindness sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. As a result, everybody become friendly, and that sort of a thing has happened. So the same may, I mean, there is this kind of a positive effect on loving kindness, compassion towards the other person who is the sick person also, and we have to take it in that sense.
There's one more question. It's a very short one that's come in. Do we have time?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. General question. It's a good one. Dear Venerable Bhante, in the Rhinos Sutta, we hear only males becoming Pacheka Buddhas. Does that mean females don't become Pacheka Buddhas? That's a good question.
We'll see in the upcoming verses. If I found a female, I'll let you know. Still, I think we didn't come across. Let's see.
I'll make it my own opinion. I find men are the worst meditators. Females are much better.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, they meditate this life as females, and when they are attaining Pacheka Buddhas, probably they may born as a male. So that is, I mean, on the other hand, sometimes actually we don't see the big picture and we only consider this life. And it's kind of a transformations also can happen. And we don't need to take these things too serious that I am a male, I am a female. So these are, in a way, restrictions that we are putting on and we are identifying with. And when you are practicing Dhamma, so these restrictions, these conventional terms have to disappear. You don't need to feel that I'm a female, so I mean there are no Pacheka Buddhas who have attained female, I mean being female who accomplish Pacheka Buddhahood. So this kind of way of thinking is not necessary as you are practicing Dhamma, because once you are developing Vipassana, so the Dhamma is common to everyone. It doesn't have any gender difference. So when you are feeling, assume that the impermanence through your practice, if you are a male or female, is the same impermanence that you are experiencing. If you are experiencing emptiness, the same emptiness, there is no difference as female emptiness or male emptiness, it's the same emptiness. So therefore, so these divisions, distinctions are only conventional. We don't need to take those seriously.
With that, I'd like to end the program. We've gone over time. First of all, I'd like to thank Bhante and Pasanao Merits for giving up time and guidance for this program. Also to the people seen and unseen working to help run this program and also participating. And lastly, to all the people on the call, because without you, there would be no program. So with that, I'd like to end it. Dhiruvan Saranai.
Yeah, there one sunlight. Suki Hotu.